Welcome to Generations. Friends, Kevin Swanson here, Executive Director of Christian Home Educators, also a pastor. But the reason I broadcast here on this radio station, I'm a father of five. And today, as fathers, Dave Buhner also in studio with me, we want to look at a major problem that is afflicting a huge percentage of our country, and I know many other countries around the world. And Dave, I think one of the desires we have on this radio program is to inspire men to be visionary men of God in their homes. But there's a problem. Many men are taken by the sin of fornication, adultery, and pornography. And these are sins that take the vision right out of the sails. And Christianity Today just came out with an article a week ago or so, where they stated 70% of American men ages 18 to 34 view internet pornography once a month. They also referred to a survey done by a Christian church where they found 60% of the men in the congregation had engaged in pornography in the past year, 25% within the past 30 days. Now, as you read this article, Dave, one of the important aspects of it is how they condemn it. And effectively, they ask the question, what's wrong with pornography? And the answer is, it's addicting. Now, Dave, I think that's insufficient. And so, you know, I'd say there's a lot of justification going on. And one of the reasons you have so much justification going on is because people don't understand what constitutes a sin of the flesh.
Well, yeah, let's call it what it is. It's the sin of lust. Addicting has nothing to do with it. Potato chips are addicting. Lay's potato chips, nobody can eat just one.
Yeah.
And Doritos, we'll make more. I mean, come on. It's got nothing to do with how addicting it is. It has to do with the very essence of what it is. It is lust of the heart.
And we're not going to say potato chips are sinful. But, you know, again, we're going to define this in just a moment, friends. But before we get into that, I want to touch on just a few other stories that have come out recently from Australia, a book-length study issued just last month called The Porn Report from University of New South Wales, found that only 7% of users thought that pornography had any negative effect. That is, most people using pornography, that is no big deal. It's these guys making a big deal out of this. Here's the profile of a typical user. Male under the age of 35 years of age. He's an average earner, bringing home about $40,000 a year, probably lives in the suburbs. Votes for major parties, is just as likely to back Labor as the coalition, but he's also religious. Listen to this. Probably Christian. He has a good social life with friends, family, and work colleagues, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Monogamous relationship. So there it is. Yeah. Dave, I think there are a lot of Christians that use pornography, and it may be about the same extent that you see it in the wider culture.
Here's what I think was key about that study. He's under 35. That means he was raised on MTV, which by its very nature, you know, tell me if I'm wrong here. I think it's pornographic. It is a culture of fornication.
It's pornography light. It's pornography light. You know, you got the light beer, you got light pornography. And, Dave, of course, that's what you get out of Hollywood to a great extent. You know, you get familiar with the immodesty and the fornication, which, by the way, is pretty much endemic throughout most Hollywood movies today. It doesn't matter whether it's PG, PG-13, or R-rated. You're being carefully prepared for a fornicating culture, and that, of course, is one of the reasons why 95% of Americans confess to premarital sex on their wedding day. So, anyway, let's move ahead. There's a British study here that finds pornography to be one of the number one contributors to the breakdown of the marriage relationship. Apparently, pornography makes sex-lazy men even sex-lazier. No surprises there, Dave.
No, there's no surprise at all. First off, pornography gives a man an instant, a never-say-no kind of woman, and when he doesn't get that in real life, he can go back to the one who's going to say yes.
Much less of a hassle. You know, it shows up on the screen, shows up on the pages, but you don't have to have a relationship. Relationships are a hassle. Who wants a relationship when you can, you know, have some fun with a piece of paper?
Well, you don't have to buy dinner and you don't have to send roses.
Yeah, exactly. Also, a recent survey from the University of Alberta concerning children in porn. Apparently, boys ages 13 and 14 living in rural areas are the most likely of their age group to access pornography.
And according to this report, parents need to be more aware of how to monitor their children's viewing habits. This survey was done of 429 students, ages 13 and 14, from 17 urban and rural schools across Alberta. And one of the most interesting results from this study found that 90% of males report accessing sexually explicit media content at least once. More than one-third of the boys reported reviewing pornographic DVDs, et cetera, et cetera. Too many times to count. Incredible. So they, by the time they're 13 and 14 years age, 33% of these little boys are already addicted to pornography. The most interesting aspect of this particular study from Alberta, Canada, found that almost half of rural youth, that is country boys, in the survey reported seeing pornographic videos or DVDs at least once, compared to one-third of the urban participants. And the story is trying to figure out why pornography is so much more common among those who live in small towns and live in the countryside. And, Dave, I think we have talked about this before. Small towns, of course, are not anonymous. People know each other, so if you're shacking up with somebody or if you're having sexual relations with somebody, pretty much everybody gets to know about it. In the big cities, that doesn't happen quite so easily. But there is one way you can keep it anonymous, and that is by bringing the red light districts of the big city into the home via the internet, DVDs, and so forth. So I think one of the ways that boys and families learn how to keep pornography and illicit sexual experiences anonymous is by means of this internet pornography.
Again, internet pornography, you don't have to have a relationship. Nobody has to know. You don't have to ask your mother. You don't have to ask his father. You just destroy all relationship, and you end up with a virtual relationship that just gives you what you want. I mean, let's face it, if you were going to use somebody for sex, that's messy.
Yeah. Well, folks, before we take the break, I need to tell you that there are a lot of what I would call biblical apologetics out there these days on the web and in bookstores for every form of sexual perversion you can imagine. I was in a secular bookstore a couple of years ago and found a series of books that a pastor had written on how it was appropriate to engage in homosexual relations. This sort of thing is very, very common these days. And so I think we ought to just take a moment, in just a moment, and talk about what the Bible says about pornography. That's next on Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson. Stay with us. Folks, believe it or not, this is our eighth year on the air. Our first broadcast was October 3rd, 2003. From the beginning, we produced the program as a commercial endeavor, and then 2 years ago decided to rely entirely on listener support. And by God's grace, we're making some progress. But this is fundraising month. Each year during May, we target 100 sponsors to keep us on the air for one more year. And we're hoping that by God's grace, we will be on the air for one more year. If you find the ideas helpful on this program, if you receive some discipleship, some encouragement yourself, please consider supporting our program. We know that we have about 500,000 listeners a year from 80 countries around the world. We have people in Sweden, Ireland, Australia, England, many of whom have no other encouragement for the kind of ideas they get on this program. But they get it here on Generations. They're encouraged every day by what they hear on this radio broadcast from my basement out on the eastern plains of Colorado. So if you listen to the program or watch us, you know what we're all about. Family, fathers, freedom, faith, home-based discipleship, family-based economies, relationships in a cold and lonely world, worldview and discipleship, truth and relationships, a vision for future generations. That's what we're all about. And we are so privileged to get the very best speakers, pastors, fathers, Christian leaders in the country talk about worldview and family issues. Folks like Mike Farris, Ken Ham, Bodie Baucom, Al Mohler's been here, Paul David Tripp, R.C. Sproul, Phyllis Schlafly, David Noble, Tim Challies, Nancy Percy, Wayne Grudem, Sam Crabtree, and Dave. Dave Buhner, he's a regular on the program. Well, folks, we don't get a lot of psychobabble flim-flam on this program, because we don't want to raise up more weaky-weaky fruits for generations to come. Our desire is a vision that will cast for future generations and will encourage and inspire many generations and hopefully rebuild faith, family, and freedom during the breakdown of Western civilization. That's what we're doing out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. If you'd like to support the program, just simply go to our website, kevinswanson.com, and click on Support the Program and join our fundraising campaign for May. Our target is 100 sponsors for the month of May, 100 sponsors for the month of May at $10 a month, $20 a month, or $50 a month, or even a one-time donation. Friends, if you would like to support the program, kevinswanson.com. That's kevinswanson.com.
And we're back on Generations, my friends. Kevin Swanson with you today talking about the subject of pornography. And as I mentioned, there are multiple, quote-unquote, Christian biblical apologetics now for just about every shameful sexual perversion you can imagine. Homosexuality, lesbianism, pornography, etc., etc. Everybody's trying to justify their behavior on this slippery slope down to Gomorrah. And we want to take just a moment and take a look at what the Bible has to say about issues like modesty and pornography. And, Dave, I think the very first thing we ought to say is that the Bible speaks very highly of the virtue of modesty. It's important in dress, and you are shaming people when you stare at their naked parts. You think of Noah, when Noah was uncovered, and two of his sons, remember, went backwards. They covered him by being very careful not to look upon his nakedness. And, of course, in Leviticus, you have the incest laws described as the uncovering of the nakedness of some of your relatives. And it's very important in the scriptures to maintain that modesty. Dave, I think this is the very, very most basic element of chastity, and that is respecting another person's body by not staring at their nakedness.
Yes, even if that person is showing you their nakedness for you to stare at.
Sure, sure. And I was just in Hawaii, Dave, and we went to Waikiki, and we were down in Kauai, and it didn't matter where you were on the beach, Dave. You know what? You just couldn't, you know, see much of the scenery because the scenery was sort of blocked by a lot of tan. And so it's all over the place, especially if you hit the beach. But, you know, you go to the mall these days, you're going to catch a lot of body parts flashing around as well. And I think the key thing here, Dave, is as Christians, we need to be modest and respect the other person's modesty. In other words, when you're looking at somebody else's nakedness, you shame them. And especially if you're sitting there lusting after the nakedness, you're doing the same thing. And, you know, if somebody, let's say you're at a dinner party or something, and you're sitting around maybe fellowshipping, and somebody rips their dress, and what do? You don't sit and stare at them. That just shames them. You turn your head. You change the subject, you know, let her gracefully back out of the conversation or whatever. I mean, isn't that common knowledge? Or are we forgetting that this is how we handle other people? This is how we respect their bodies.
Well, and I think some people would respond that in that situation you just described, that person hasn't made a display. They haven't purposely put it out there. So it was an accidental display. It was an observation. Okay, you turn your head, you look away. And that's, you know, that's just not being rude. What happens, though, when a woman dresses in such a way, or even a man anymore, such that they are virtually naked? I mean, almost naked. They're 99% naked. And they're saying, look at me. See, now it's not so rude. Now to look at them is still shame, only they're beyond shame. They're shameless.
Yeah. Matthew 5:27 is one of the key passages, folks. Let me read what Jesus said. He says, you have heard that it has been said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks on a woman to lust for her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. Dave, I think a lot of people, again, come back and say, now, wait a minute. With pornography, you're not looking at the person. You're only looking at a picture of the person. And yet, Dave, if you know, you're looking at a picture of somebody and desiring her in a physical sexual way, you're still lusting after that particular person represented by that particular picture. You know, I'm taking, for example, you just happen to have an inappropriate suggestive picture of your best friend's wife that came across your desk at work, or maybe as a coworker or something. And, you know, there it is, an inappropriate suggestive picture of another person's wife. Well, what do? Two possible reactions. One is to turn your head and stop shaming her, and don't shame her by looking upon her nakedness. The other approach would be commit adultery in your mind and wrongfully desire her. So again, I don't think there's any real difference between some anonymous person out there who's showing their body and somebody you know who may be showing their body in some pictorial representation.
Well, there's this difference that a person who's trying to show you their body, you're not violating them. You're not intruding on their privacy. Certainly they have given you permission. But here's the point that Jesus is making. Jesus is saying that the sin of adultery, much like the sin of murder, isn't merely the outward manifestation of that, i.e., having sexual relationships or killing somebody. It is the condition of your heart. So whether or not that person is shamed, it doesn't matter in terms of your sin. Your sin, as David says, is before you, O Lord. I have sinned against you and you only. That sin in your heart, then, that lust in your heart, is the nature of that sin. And the fact, if you're looking at somebody for the purpose of satisfying that lust or increasing that lust or provoking that lust, you're sinning.
Again, Dave, we got to grapple with, again, the argument that comes back. It says you're not looking at somebody. You're looking at a picture. So Jesus didn't say, you know, look at the picture and lust after the picture in your heart. He says, look after this woman and lust after this woman in her heart. I would come back and just say the Bible condemns lust. You take examples like 1 Corinthians 6:18, flee immorality. Every other sin that man commits is outside the body, but the immoral man sins against his own body. Or Colossians 3:5, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, greed, etc., etc. So the Bible condemns this idea of lusting after or sexually desiring somebody or something that's not your wife. I mean, if someone comes back to me and says, now what about comic porn that doesn't, you know, represent anybody? Now, in this case, you know, this isn't, and you're not looking at somebody and passionately lusting after any particular person on planet Earth. But again, I don't think the Bible would in any way justify that sort of lust, because, you know, you're not supposed to lust after anything. I mean, what if there's somebody out there wanting to lust after a fire hydrant or a Martian, for example, or a picture of a Martian or a dog? You know, obviously, the Bible does not want us lusting after anybody or anything in this sexual way. God wants us to sexually desire our own spouse, and that's it.
Well, God has given man and women a sexual desire, and I think he did it with a purpose in mind, and that purpose was the purpose of marriage, which is a picture of Christ and his church. He wants his church to be pure and holy. He certainly comes to his church pure and holy, and to the extent that we take our sexuality and we make it unholy and we make it perverted and we make it shameful, is to the extent that we denigrate what Christ did for his church.
And destroy it. You know what, Dave? When people have perverted all of these uses of the body that God has created for his glory and to be engaged within his law's order, in the end, they will destroy it. It's sort of like putting your hand inside the blender. You may say, well, I want the freedom to put my hand inside this blender. Well, okay, take the freedom and stick your hand in the blender and see what happens. You know, just keep on shoving it down there, and after a while, you have no hand. And you know, my guess is you're going to suffer some pain, too. You know, and Dave, as you know, there is a recent study that just came out, found one quarter of American teen girls have a sexually transmitted disease. Again, this is the product of abandoning God's way of living. This is a product of abandoning God's law. Effectively, people don't want to live by God's law. They want to live a life of freedom. They will embrace total slavery and God's judgment in the flesh.
And Kevin, the ironic thing is that as we live in a sex-saturated culture, in fornication nation here, sexual satisfaction is going away. As we live in a land that wants to steal from your neighbor in the form of taxes, we'll see wealth go away. The more that we think about and lust after, and the more that we're involved in these aberrant ways of sexuality, the worse our marriage beds get. See, God has a much, much better picture. His picture is beautiful. It's beautiful that satisfies the soul and the body. It's a marriage that a man delights in. The proverb says, blessed is the man who rejoices in the wife of his youth. May her breath satisfy you at all times. This is a picture of a sexually vibrant marriage. And it's a picture of Christ in the church.
Yet it's ironic, Dave, that as people deny God, and they deny his law, and they turn to these idols. They begin to idolize the things that God created for our blessing. In the end, those idols are going to beat these people to death. You know, I mean, idolatry is always going to curse the people that idolize these things. When we turn away from the true and living God who established his law and said, you will be blessed if you keep my laws. You will be cursed and cursed and cursed some more if you turn away from my laws. And this is precisely what's happening to America, Dave. This is a replay of Deuteronomy 27 and 28.
I think what's happened, Kevin, is the Proverbs 7 woman. The woman in Proverbs 7 invites a man to her door, says her husband's her weight, says her lips are dripping with honey, her bed is prepared. She speaks these smooth words, and she lures this man, this young man, into her house, and it says her footsteps lead to death. This woman now is published in virtually every magazine in America. Her face is on the cover of not just the pornographic magazines, on the ladies' magazines, on the fashion magazines, on the celebrity news magazine. She's in the Denver Post selling women's underwear. She's everywhere. And see, you look at it, and you don't taste death right away. And step by step by step, almost a numbness to the process that's happening. You die a little bit every time, a little bit every day, and we are a dying culture. Men have ceased to take dominion largely because that drive to get a wife, to provide for a wife, to have a wife, to hold a wife, is removed because there's something instant. We're dead.
Yeah. Dave, before we end the program, I'd like to go over some practical things because, as you know, my son is now 15, 16, 17 years of age. He's awakening in some of these areas, and I know your son is getting older as well. And so I want to end with a couple of pointers that I think are critical as we teach our sons to be sexually pure, especially in this area of pornography. And, of course, the number one point that needs to be made is beware of the ignition point. Inevitably, if these single folks and these young men are driven or drawn to the temptress at the top of the path, inevitably her steps lead to hell, and the consequences are horrible as the years go by. So one of the best ways, I think, in which we can train our sons to be ready for times like these is when they are very young, teach them self-control. You know, Dave, a father from a homeschool conference out in Hawaii came up to me and asked a question about his children that, you know, pick themselves in their private areas when they're younger, or other bad habits like biting their fingernails or sucking their thumbs and these sorts of things. I told him, you know what, I think it's quite appropriate for parents to work very hard when children are young to break some of those bad habits and to teach them self-control early on. See, Dave, if these little children learn self-denial in these little areas when they're younger, they'll be able to say no to their lustful desires, their I want to do this and I want to do that, that seems to sometimes be overpowering in their later years. So I think it's important to teach our children self-control when they're very, very young, you know, by the thousands of corrections and reminders and loving disciplines that we provide our children over many, many, many times. If we provide this investment in self-control early on, they won't be as given to giving in to pornography and gluttony and these other things with every other idol that comes down the pike.
And you might want to teach him the proverb from the New King James that says, "Can a man take coals into his lap and not get burned?"
Warn him.
Yeah,
warn him.
Sure. I mean, just take the picture. Are you going to put charcoal and you're going to put it right on your crotch and not suffer? No, son, you're going to suffer. Don't mess with this. This is bigger than you. It takes down kings. It takes down governors. It takes down the mightiest of men.
And
go
over those proverbs all the time. You cruise past a billboard you know, your son might be drawn to. Hey, bring up the subject right away. Don't shovel it under the carpet. Bring it out and, again, apply those verses that Dave just mentioned. And do it with the newspapers or do it with the magazines. And I would encourage you to be very, very careful about what sort of newspapers and magazines you bring into the house. We actually canceled the newspaper, Dave, because, you know, there were a lot of female underwear ads, and I didn't want those running around my home. I don't think it was healthy for my son.
And I think you also need to give your son a vision for marriage, about a pure and blessed marriage, a marriage that is delightful. And you need to model that at home with your own marriage. Work on your own marriage. Let them know that that's very important. And the other thing is, those of you who are raising daughters, do us a favor. Raise some modest women out there for our sons to marry. Raise some women that they can get a vision for. I want that queen. She's worth the work.
You raise a really good point there, Dave. You know, if your intimate life with your wife is miserable, and if you are hitting the porn sites every 2 to 3 months yourself, you know what? You're probably preparing your son to live pretty much the life that you lived yourself. And then in that context, I would also encourage our sons to honor their mothers and, of course, their sisters as well. If they've been harsh and dishonoring to their mother, they're not going to mind trashing the honor of some other woman by looking at her privates in another situation. Dave, I think that also transmits into how they honor the sisters in the church as well. And the very last thing is, you know, as we wrap up the program today, my friends. Keep them busy. Keep those young men busy. They need to be establishing themselves in their work and in their education. They need to be preparing their cabins and their fields to one day bring their Laura Ingalls into a marriage relationship and establish their home in years to come. So keep them busy. One of the things we're doing with my assistant, Chad, Dave, is we are keeping him busy some 60, 70 hours every week. You know, he's exhausted. He's got all sorts of things going on all the time. His goal, of course, is to be married in the upcoming years. But in the meantime, his desire is to stay pure. And one of the ways to do that is to keep them busy and focused on what God has for them in years to come. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Generations. I hope the program has been helpful to you. You can interact with the program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world, at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson, inviting you back again next time as we cast a vision for the next generation.